So before we, I wanted to start, there was a case, I just spoke to Beis Din in Lakewood. There's a case of Bar Metzra that they brought up. And they mentioned to me this case of Bar Metzra, so I figured I'll share it with the Olam. We started the next Indian, but so basically the case was that there was a person who had a contract to buy a property. And then a few days prior to the closing, the tenant that was living in the property went over to the seller and made it be known to the seller that he would be interested in buying the property. The tenant has some level of rights of Bar Metzra, and therefore he wanted to come in and take the property. The Beis Din told the seller that, you know, he doesn't have to take a loss on, as we spoke out, he doesn't have to take a loss on it. And therefore, this tenant, is he in the position to buy the property? Are you confident that he'll come up with the financing, et cetera? And the seller said, yes. So they act, and it's going to take, now you're not going to be able to close in a week or two. Like you're ready to close with the other guy. He said he doesn't mind delaying it. And he would go for the tenant. Lamaisa, the buyer, the potential buyer, explained why this property was advantageous to him. And he told the tenant, look, it's likely that you may not come up with financing. It's likely that something may fall through. There is another, let's call it a commercial, let's call it like a building. So in the building or in the complex, there is in the complex, in the building, there is another property that may come up for sale. How about you go for that one? Let me take this one because this one is advantageous to me for whatever reason. But if the other one that may come up for sale in the future falls through, then you could take me and you could enforce your rights to me after the fact. And they signed a shtar that, as far as Bar Metzra is concerned, it's as if I never bought it. And therefore, you have the rights to come take the property, as if I never bought it. Lamaisa, what do you assume happened? The other property did not work out. And the tenant wanted to come back and now enforces Bar Metzra rights. In the meanwhile, the first buyer realized something else. Apparently he hired a good tayin. So he realized something else. He realized that he owned a different unit in that building or in that complex. Now, when you own a unit in the complex, in the building, so there are areas that all the tenants share in common, right? Common areas. So when you buy, let's say, your apartment, you're buying your apartment, and then you're buying a certain amount of, I guess, rights to the lobby, to the common areas, to the elevators. What are the common areas, right? You're buying a certain, that is included in your, what you bought. Does that make sense, right? So he wanted to tie up, since I already own something in this building, so I'm a shutif with the original seller in this property. And we learned in Bar Metzra that Shutif is a better Matzron than the Soicher. Who's a better Matzron? A Shutif? If you want to sell a house, so you have the person renting the home is a Matzron, but then you have a Shutif. A Shutif is more than a tenant. A Shutif is a partial owner in the home. So if you have a Shutif who's a partial owner in the home, so you want the tenant, anyway, I'm a better Matzron than you. Because since in the common areas we are shutfim, I my other unit makes me a shutif with the seller. So now I'm a shutif in the property, and therefore the shutfis that I have would allow me to have kedima in Dina de Bar Metzra.
That's very nice. You signed.
What I signed was that after I bought it is not going to be worse than before I bought it. But before I bought it also didn't have to give it to you. Because it's not because I bought the property that I'm not. I was a matzah before the sale. That was his time. I was a matzah the whole time. I didn't chop that, but I was a matzah the whole time. So then what did they say? No. This shutvis that you have, this was the kasha, the shayla. The shutvis that you have in the property is not a real shutvis of ownership. You can't really use the apartment. It's only a shutvis called drisas regel. You could walk in the common areas. Is a shutvis of drisas regel enough to say that type of shutvis is enough to be doich of the matzah of soicher? And this is the din Torah that they're in the middle of right now. So this is a din right now in the Beis Din. He knew that we were learning Bar Mitzvah, so he shared with me this case. That was interesting. Interesting case. It's not a very strong shutvis in this case. I agree. But this was the it's a shutvis of hishtamshus, but not a shutvis in bailus at all, basically, right? And I can't use it with you. I can't go ahead ownership. So you know, the question was: if this would be true, then that would complicate matters tremendously. I mean, in any condo, anybody in the building would be a matron to someone from outside the building, because now they're like a shutif because they're the shutif in the common areas. So if you would say this, that would add a brand new knach to every single sale of a condo or a common area, and maybe even, I don't know, but maybe even in a development where you have HOA, you know, a gated community. I don't know. Maybe it's, I don't know exactly there how the common grounds work. There's parks and stuff like that. You know, maybe also you have common areas. So, and that was a child that came up. I don't know if it's a chiddush, but maybe it's a chiddush that should apply by shutvis l'gavei bar mitzvah. Because the property that's being sold, you're not a shutif in his house. You can't get into his house.
I asked Shalom about the shul in the common area, and the architect said that it's not sold.
Okay, so you don't own it. Okay, that could be hefker.
Your shutif is not a shutif.
Right, it's not really. I don't know how much ownership you have in there. There's chometz there. You have to get rid of it. You know, I'm not sure exactly what the level of ownership you have over that area is. You definitely I don't know. There's enough attorneys in here. I'm not going to say anything, but I don't exactly know if you own the property, the common grounds or not. I don't know what your level of ownership is.
In my association agreement, the condominium association has first right of refusal if you're in the seller unit.
Okay. Cause that's probably a real, I don't know what that is.
It's very common. Every condo has it.
Right. Then what? That they would want to buy it back.
Because in case they don't want this guy to move in, I saw him.
Right.
So you but I've had a few cases where they have exercise.
Okay. One other point I want to get to before I start the next Indian. The next sugya we want to get to is brokers. We talked about a while ago about Shadchanim. And it's really the same thing as brokers, but we're going to flip it that way. But before that, I wanted to get back to a point in last week's sugya. So last week's sugya was the sugya of how far along in the process of a deal are you allowed to back out? And dvarim, when it's just verbal, which we said verbal doesn't mean verbal versus written. Verbal means verbal versus a kinyan. You didn't actually finish the kinyan. So the question is, are you allowed to back out? You told the guy, we came to a meeting of the minds, we agreed on the price, we agreed basically on the terms, and there's probably, is there a level of smichas das, which means each one is relying on the other one to finish the deal, but, you know, you're in contract and you still have your 14 days. So can you go back? So he said, you know, during the review period or whatever it's called. So pashtus, we assumed that there is no real smichas das. There's no real one side relying on the other, because the assumption is that, you know, anything could go wrong and change the deal. We brought up a different question, which is what happens if I'm willing to forego my deposit, later on in the deal, but rates change. Something changed in the deal. And I gave you my word, I'm going to do the deal. We agreed on everything, but there's outside factors that went ahead and changed the mitzias and what happened, right? The rates changed. Trey Tari, which is very common lately. So the rates change. Are you mechoyev to, look, I told you I'm doing it. You relied on me. So we said that the Ramah says that Trey Tari is not enough in Simon Reish Ches, is not enough to go back. You still be called mechusar amana. You still called mechusar amana. Mechusar amana means you're not a trustworthy person. You're going against your word. Sherry's Yisrael lost your avlo. It's like you're going against your word. And he relied on you. So that's mechusar amana. It's not a good thing. And that's the way there are Muslims to say. However, we brought down a Taz in Hilchos Mila. And the Taz in Hilchos Mila was a case where you had told somebody that you're going to use him to be the Moyel. And then he comes in from out of town, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a bigger tzaddik here. The Rebbe of Rebbe is in town, and you want to use him to do your Mila. And, you know, so are you allowed to change your mind? And the Taz says yes. So the question was, why is the Taz saying that you're allowed to go back? Some Sofer says, you see from the Taz that he argues on the Ramah, and he says Trey Tari would be permitted to go back as long as there's a significant change in the circumstance. It's not a problem, and you can go back. But the Ramah doesn't say that, and it's very strange to say the Taz out of nowhere just argue without even saying it. And you know, is there any other way out of this Taz essentially?
You certainly have to pay for him.
His losses, you mean?
Coming, his time coming in and his flight.
Perhaps. Now you have to learn the hochas of garmi. It's like an indirect damage. So are you obligated to pay someone for their indirect damage? You know, you told them to come. Like maybe that's more direct. I'm not sure exactly. But the fact that, let's say, he could have had a bris elsewhere, I'm not sure, you know? So to explain this Taz, I want to just say maybe a little bit of a, this is not halacha l'maisa specifically, it's more in the lumdus and the understanding of the whole sugya of mechusar amana from the Sefer Mishnas Yaivitz, which is Rav Tzal Zolti, your uncle? And Rav Tzal Zolti. And he has a shtickle in the Mishnas Yaivitz to explain this whole sugya of mechusar amana, and he has a beautiful shtickle. So he basically says like this. What would happen on something, he basically has a chakira. What's the pshat in this thing? I told you I'm going to do the deal. And we said last week, if you never relied on me, I'm allowed to change my mind. What's the difference if I relied on you or I didn't rely on you? If it's about my midas ha'emes, I said it at the end of the day. So he wants to say the following based on the Gemara. The Gemara says, we didn't learn the Gemara together, but later on in the Amud, in Bab Metzia, this Gemara says like this: if I promised a Kohen, a Levi actually, I told a Levi, I'm going to give you 10 pounds of Miser, right? In my grains. So I always separate the Miser, and there's 10 pounds of Miser. I have to give 10 pounds of Miser to the Levi, and I tell the Levi, I'm going to give him the 10 pounds of Miser. Now, the halach is that the Levi has to give 1/10, so 1 pound, he has to give to a Kohen. So the Kohen gets the Truma from the Yisrael, but he also gets the Truma's Miser from the Levi, okay? So what happens if I went to a Levi, I said, look, I got these 10 pounds of Miser, you have them, I'm gonna give them to you. Then he says, you know, let me, I have a coin that's hounding me for some Trumas Miser. This coin's down my back, I'm gonna pre-give it. I'm gonna give the Truma before I get the Miser, I'm gonna give him a pound. So I gave him the pound of, Then the Yisrael changes his mind. And he says, yeah, you know what? I found a better Levi. Nothing personal, but I found a better Levi. So was the Trumas Meiser that the Levi gave, did that work or not? So the Gemara says it works because it's a Matana Muetes. It's not considered a big gift for me to give him 10 pounds of Meiser. Why? Because I can't eat the Meiser anyway. I have to give it to someone. So to me, to promise him to give him 10 pounds of mice is called matana mu'etes. It's not a big gift. And therefore, he was allowed to rely on what I said. And he was permitted to take off a pound of truma from that mice to give it to a kohen. So the Ketzoyes HaChayshin asks, but he didn't own it yet. How is he allowed to give Meiser from the Meiser if I didn't even give it to him yet? So Rabbi Tzolzot says, you see from here a concept that the idea of saying to someone that you're going to do it and relying on it creates some level of a kinyan. It creates some level of a kinyan that he has some level of ownership in. Just like by hektish, there's a concept of dvar maniknin ba'amira. You say it's hektish, it becomes hektish. So he has a lashon from Tosfos and Ksuvos. Tosfos and Ksuvos, his lashon is afilu ba'amira ba'alma yesh dvarim sheniknin sham k'moy deshamina l'Rabbi Yochanan be'atzav hanaisem matan matas achver kana afu pishlo yigil yada. That's Tosfos and Ksuvos.
You find ba'amira ba'alma, you don't get mavus because she's not there ba'alma.
Okay, you know, it's he wants to say that the idea when you tell someone and they agree 100% and both sides agree to it and everyone's relying on it to the point that he went ahead and already pre-meisered the meiser, so he was completely reliant on it. Okay, so he wants to say that according to some Rishonim, it actually is to a degree, it's a level of kinyan. But it's a level of kinyan that if you go back on it, you could break it. But it was actually a kinyan. According to that, when you go ahead and break your word, it's not just an honesty thing. It's not just, I broke my word. It's a certain level of gzela. You're actually taking away from him something that he already felt a certain amount of ownership over. So therefore, it's a much more strict, you know, So therefore, that's the chaymer hadavar of an amira, he wants to say. When there's a real deal here, and I told you I'm going to give it to you, there was a dvar maniknin ba'amira, it was a kinyan, you retained a certain rights to it. If I break it, I'm taking it away from you.
Kinyan is only if he does a maisa.
It's a kinyan of amira.
Well, the maisa, you have to say, was reasonable for that lady to have maisa.
But we said, because it's matan muetis. You're allowed to be samich das on matan muetis. That was what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan holds a matan. Why is it called matan muetis? It's 10 pounds of grain. It's matan muetis because I don't have any. I don't care to give it to him. So anytime you have a matan muetis, it's a reasonable thing, and you came to terms, according to these, you're shining, he proves it from the Balamar, the Rosh, and Tosfos. The idea is, Amir is not just, you know, I said it. No, I said it, and therefore he retained a certain rights to the thing, and I'm going and taking away something from him that he had a right to feel a certain right amount of ownership over, to the point that he could be mastered. This is what he said.
But bringing an engagement would fall into the same conversation.
Okay, so let's talk about that, okay? Now, he wants to say there's another level. It's a much lower level. The lower level is, call it in yeshivish terms, it's two dinim. There's another level, which is, no, it's not a kinyan, but like probably the way we understood it last week. I told you I'm going to do it. You got to keep your word. I relied on it. The other guy relied on it. It's not nice. You got to be honest. You got to be to the point. And you, by breaking the deal, are breaking your word. But it's not about a matter of kinyan. So you want to say major nafkamina in this thing. What about if you have something that even, let's say, you know, there's a concept called a davar shelo b'olam, something that's not in the world yet. Something that's not in the world yet, you can't even make a kinyan on it, even a real kinyan. For example, let's say I tell you, I'm going to sell you a car. I'm going to sell you a car. Okay, can I see it? No, I just don't have it yet. I don't have it yet. But I'm getting it. I already, you know, I know where I'm getting it from. When I get the car, I'm going to sell it to you. And not only did you rely on my word, you made kinyanim. You signed document. You gave me money. You made all the kinyanim in the world. A real kinyan. Is that kinyan chal? Does that take effect? No, because I don't own it. It's called davar shaloi b'rashus lo b'loilam. A davar shaloi b'loilam, you can't even make a kinyan on it. So if you can't make a kinyan on it, if you said words about it, it's for sure not going to be chal the kinyan. It's not going to be better than actually making the kinyan, right?
You still have an issue.
Oh, so that's what he says. He says, this is a nafkamina between the two levels. You can't have the higher level on a davar shaloi b'loilam because I can't even make a real kinyan on it, let alone a kinyan of Amira. But if I told you I'm going to sell you, I'll still be considered dishonest if you relied on me. You relied on me telling you that I'm going to give you the car when I get it. It's not a kinyan. It won't be called the higher level of, like, if I break my word, I'm like taking it away from you, because It's not a real kinyan, but it will still be considered dishonest for me to change my mind because you relied on it. What's the nafkamina that you relied on it? I don't know. You had a different deal on a car that you didn't take. Something else happened, right? So memela, it would still be considered dishonest. So what about your case? What about when you tell someone, I will do something for you? For example, like you just said, an engagement, you know? Now, probably this traitari over there. Okay. So let's take that for example. Let's say, is that something that if you would make a kinyan would be different?
Right.
So even if you made a kinyan on saying, I will get engaged to you, the kinyan is still, it's kinyan tvar and ba'alma. You can't make a kinyan on that. It's not an ownership. It's not a chalois of anything. It's just saying, you, if I say a kinyan to you, I will do something, it's still not chal as a kinyan. You understand what I'm saying? I will do something. You know, even if you make a kinyan, it's not chal kinyan. It's not going to take effect. I tell you, you know, like I said, you know, I'll go with you. I'll take a walk with you every morning. You see, you're bored on your walks. I'll take a walk with you and I make a kinyan with you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't take effect, the kinyan. So he says, so memela, you would still be mechusar amana, but it's not going to be the higher level of like a kinyan. So he says, what happens if I tell someone I'm going to use you as my moil? I use you as my moil. And even if I make a kinyan on it, it's just a kinyan dvar ba'alma. You can't take a real kinyan on that. Even if you would have made a real kinyan with the person, it doesn't make a difference. You could still go back. So he wants to say like this. If you, anything that you can't make a real kinyan on, if you told him you're going to do it, it's only considered dvar ba'alma. Over there, treitari is matir, to go back. Over there, if there's a change in circumstance, you're allowed. So you tell someone, I'll sell you the car. That's the lower level of promising because it's just, there's no kinyan chal. It's just that I told you, I gave you my word. So if there's an outside circumstance that causes that to change, I would be allowed to go back. So let's say all of a sudden rates are totally different. I can't keep the price. I can't keep the price that I told you.
Used cars went up like crazy. Like
that. Right. Yeah. And still, yeah. I can't keep the price that I told you. Rates changed, things changed. So there, since even if I would have made a kinyan, it wouldn't have been chal. So if circumstances change, I could change my mind. But let's say I have the car. And then I told you, look, here's the price. So if we would have made the kinyan at that moment, the kinyan would have taken effect. So therefore, my words are a level of kinyan. And therefore, even if rates change, I shouldn't go back. You hear the difference? It's a very beautiful shtickel, he's saying. And according to this, Miyashiv the Taz and the Shach by Mila, because by Mila, there was that's a lower level of smichas das, because you can't, it's not something you can make a kinyan on. I told you that I will hire you. Okay.
You know, the kinyan ksuba, kinyan kiddushin, all these types are also dvar
ma'am. No, a kinyan kiddushin is a chalois.
Yeah, every ksuba, it's dvar. He's giving you dvar.
It's chayvus. I know you can't change your mind the next day. It's chal chayvus. You can't change your mind on that. I change my mind. If I tell someone I will hire you, you can change my mind. It's not something you can make a kinyan on. Nothing actually. You can say, I'll mischayev myself $100 if I don't hire you. That you could say. I don't think you could just say, I'm mischayev myself to hire you. I don't know if that's a kinyan dvar. Something which is dvar and ba'alma. Something which is dvar and ba'alma, you can't make a kinyan on it, right? So therefore, if you can't make a kinyan on it, your amira would also not be more than that. Okay, so it's a chiluk. So it would come out like this. So it would come out with Gabi last sugya. Oh, there's another big nafkamina. Are you allowed to change your mind on something which you can't make a kinyan on? If circumstances change, it depends. If you have the item or something you can make a kinyan on, you shouldn't change your mind no matter what. If it's something that you can't make a kinyan on because you don't even have it, or it's just a service or a promise, in that case, even if you change your, in that case, if circumstances change, you'd be allowed. One other nafkamina. This is a great nafkamina. We came to terms. I promised you I'm going to do the deal. Everything's moving forward. We did not follow all the good advice that we always hear in every shir. Put it in writing. We didn't put it in writing. And everything is just diwar ba'alma. Okay, but we trust each other. Now all of a sudden, one side dies. do the Yorshim have to complete the deal? Is it considered mechusar amana? Mechusar amana, is it considered dishonest for the Yorshim to not do the deal? Huh? Let's take the case of the car. The father said, I'm selling you the car, came to terms, $10,000, you can take the car next week, pick it up, and then bam, he dies, and the kids are like, actually, I need the car. Whatever, I'm not interested. Actually, I can get 11. My father doesn't negotiate, and I can get 11.
We know by Karbonos, by Hekdesh, by said that they didn't divide amongst themselves, but they just got the Yerusha, and they have here to fulfill their father's obligation.
That's a neder. That's Mistama. There's also, so what's Mechusar Amanah? It's the halacha. So the Machan Ephraim brings from Rabbi Akiva Eiger that the Yorshim do not have to. But he has another makar from a Tosfos somewhere that you do have to.
This is even the higher level.
This is what he wants, his taina. So a beautiful, beautiful chiluk. He says maybe it will be depend on this. It depends what did the father promise. If the father promised, I'm going to sell you the car when I get it. So the father himself didn't have the car. So it was just a promise. So if it was just a promise, very nice, the father should keep it, but the Yorshim are not obligated to do everything the father promised. And they wouldn't even consider Mechusar Amanah. They're not dishonest. They didn't say it. It's not a matter of them not keeping their word. So there's no Mechusar Amanah, and that's what Kibbeger is saying, that there's no problem. But let's say it's the father's car. Okay. So he had it. So there, when the father said, I'm going to give it to you, it was chal a certain amount of kinyan. It was a certain amount of ownership. What? Right. As the father had the car, and the other person felt a certain relationship with the car already, to the point that if the father would have broken the deal, it would be like taking the car away from the buyer. In that case, he feels that the Yarshim should keep the deal because it's like they're taking away from the other party. So it would really depend on that type of thing. The father said, well, I'm going to use you to fix the roof. All right. The Yarshim don't want to use him to fix the roof. They don't have to. But if it's something which is more concrete that the father already went into a deal on, in that case, then the Yorshim should follow through according to this shtickle. So it's I think it's an eye-opening shtickle in terms of within the sugya of Mechusar Amanah, right? Being dishonest, there's still levels. It's not just a word. It's not just I promise, I didn't promise. There's actually, you know, significance to your word, that it's like a certain amount of kinyan. It's a certain amount of ownership that he has rights to. So that's one nafkamina is davar shel b'loilam. Another nafkamina is the yarshim. Okay, okay, fine. So that's lagabe. That's as far as this is concerned. All right. Now let's go into the next sugya that I wanted to discuss when it comes to we'll just touch on it. We'll just introduce the concept. Real estate, which is the halacha of the brokers. Okay? Now, obviously, nowadays, brokers, there's contracts, and there's all sorts of law, you know, you enter into a real contract. But before we talk about the contract, let's talk about what the halacha perspective of a broker with whom you did not sign a contract. Someone stops and brings you a deal. What's the level of do you have any halachic responsibility to pay someone that brings you a deal? Okay. So, and if so, what will be the source for that? Okay. So in the halacha, it's broken down that there's two types of brokers. There's one type where you actually ask the person, go do this for me. And that itself, there's two different cases. I have a house to sell, or I want to buy a house. Let's put it like that, because house to sell gets into, you know, you have to sign a brokerage, whatever. I want to buy a house. And I send the person and I say, look, go find me a house in North Miami Beach. I want to get myself a house there. Can you find me a house? So you made him a shliach. You made him a shliach formally to go do you a shlichus for you, right? In that case, you could have another level, which is you actually told him, go get me that house. specifically. I want that house. Can you talk to the seller? I know you have a relationship with him. Try to work on that seller. Okay. There is another type where I didn't ask him to do anything for me. I'm sitting here. I'm pretty happy. I mentioned I would move to North Miami Beach, or whatever. And then the guy's like antennas goes up, and he comes to me and he says, "I have a house for you." I never mentioned anything to him about buying me a house. I never told him I want you to be my shliach. He brings me a deal. I actually go through the deal, etc. Do I pay him anything? Okay. So the first case is where I appointed him. The second case is where I did not appoint him. Okay, so this sugya is called the sugya of sarser in the lashon of the halacha. Sarser means someone that brings together two people. It brings together two people to do a deal. So the halacha recognizes the value of the sarser, and the sarser is obligated. You are mechuyev to pay the sarser up yalacha. You do have to pay him. You do have to pay the broker up yalacha. It doesn't say how much. Doesn't say the percentage of the deal. None. It doesn't say that. But you do have to pay. There's for sure an amount that you have to pay. Now, why? So Pashat Pshat is if you hired him, you hired him as a poyel. He's your worker. He works for you. Of course you have to pay him. And there's probably a going rate. And you figure out what the going rate is. Right? But what about if it's a guy, which is common, a guy, you never asked him for anything. And he brings you a deal. Yeah, I have a good idea. Hey, would you be interested in this? And it works out. So what's over there? Do you have to pay him or not? So this is also a law. So I think it's not, if you have the couple copies. So I made a few. There's on page one, there's a Shulchan Aruch, it's in the Kuf Pehei. Okay. So the place where it's like not so clear, it comes in through a different case. But it's on page one. So it's a shaila from the Chuvas Arash. We're going to talk about the Chuvas Arash again a few times because the Chuvas Arash is the source for a lot of the shailas. Right? What's the most common shaila when it comes to the broker? He gives me the idea. I tell him, man, I'm not interested. And then all of a sudden I close the deal myself. Right? So the question of circumventing the broker and all sorts of different ways how it's dressed up. But basically, that's a shayla maisim b'chol yoyim on this. It happens all the time, right? So this is really, it didn't just happen. This shayla did not start today. The Rosh himself has a shayla about this case. Okay? So on page one, there's a shayla like this. Reuven hayoloi bay, which is in Simon Kuf Peish, Chosh Mishpat, Kuf Peish, Sivvav. So it says like this: Reuven hayoloi bayis limkar. Reuven had a house to sell. Uba Shimon v'sirser l'moicher l'levi. Shimon came and says, "I heard you want to sell your house. I have a buyer for you. I got Levi. I have Levi. He wants to buy it." V'amar Reuven shkoyach Levi. She Levi soynoi. I can't stand Levi. The only person on the planet I would not sell my house to is Levi. Go get. He bring me Levi. He's the one guy I can't sell my house to. I don't like him. I don't want to sell it to him. Afterwards, lo and behold, 2 months later, Shimon, who's the broker, walking down the street, and he sees Levi in the house. He says, "What's happened here?" He says, "Reuven ended up selling it to Levi with a different broker." Right? So what happened? All of a sudden, you made up? I mean, I thought you don't like Levi. You have to pay Shimon, the first broker, the brokerage. Okay? So the question is, before we get into the shaila of like what happened here, you told him no, then you went to someone else. Why do you have to pay the first guy? Why do you have to pay the second guy? Who? What exactly was the story? Before you get into that, why bichlal do you have to pay Shimon anything? It sounds like you didn't ask Shimon to go bring you a buyer, because if you did, you probably would have told him, bring me any buyer except for Levi. Sounds like Shimon just offered you a deal. So why do you have to pay him at all? So the Gra here brings down in Yud Gimel, says Reuven Shapirish Haram Taima de Sarsa Nortel Schar. the asar gets paid, afapi, even though shaloi shalchai, even though he was not sent explicitly by the party to go do it, the asar ba me'atzmai, and he came on his own, k'mo yoyred l'sadach haver v'nata, amin b'metzia itmar ha'yoyred. So there's a famous case called yoyred. What's called yoyred? So yoyred is an interesting halacha that people tend to think is strange. I don't know, every time I talk about it, everyone looks at me like it's a strange halacha. I don't know. Basically, if somebody comes and he does provides a service to you on your property, that you benefited from the service, even though you did not ask him to do it, you have to pay him for the amount that he benefited you. So, for example, your house is... needs a, I don't know if a paint job is a good example. What? Right. But your house is falling apart. It looks like you need a paint job. And he says you really need a. And you might see, you go away for the summer. You come back. All of a sudden, your house is painted. Well, okay. I was about to get it painted anyway. I guess got it. Then the guy comes and knocks on your door, and he's. What?
Now we feel that I needed a cut. I have to cut the
weeds
for the painting. Like I said,
that's what I'm saying. It's hard to figure out in today's day and age. Okay, so that's what you're saying. The example is the example would be. But he's saying a good example. I grew my wheat, and I have to hire somebody to harvest it. And now I come back the next morning; it's all harvested. So the guy comes and says, "I did it for you. Can you pay me?" So the halach is you have to pay him. Now, how much do you pay him? You don't actually pay him the full amount that would cost necessarily to, the full what he's charging, but you pay him for like some level of hana. Like, what's the value of having harvested wheat versus unharvested wheat? Okay, fine. So the Gros says, what do you see from there? That you can create an unspoken employer-employee relationship with someone. You could become an employee of someone without even being hired. As long as you work for them and you benefit them, then automatically you're considered his employee and he has to pay you. Again, not the full amount, but he's got to pay you for your time. He's got to pay you a certain amount, whatever the calculation is. Because benefiting someone, even if they didn't know about it, or even if you didn't ask them to, is considered being their employee.
I thought you were doing me a favor.
No, I was doing myself a favor. No one else was hiring me, so I figured I'd go to you.
Rabbi, what happens like with a broker where it's by the law of most states you have to be licensed, but you're still benefiting if someone brings
right.
a buyer?
Right.
Do you follow the law?
Right. Is from the perspective of the buyer the same thing?
The buyer benefited. Somebody benefited. But yeah, whether it's a buyer's broker or seller's broker, either way you benefit. But it's illegal to pay something.
Right, I know.
It's a third-degree felony.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm aware of that issue. I'm aware of that issue.
But do we follow up to some halakha that it has to comply with the law, or there's a benefit?
Right. There must be a... Right.
Al, can it pay? Can it pay a consulting thing?
Halachically, you have to pay him. Legally, I guess you're saying you're not supposed to. So that's a different shear. What happens when halachically you have to pay him? Legally, you don't.
If you're not allowed to receive it, or you're not allowed to pay it?
Both. I'm sure you can receive it.
Let me just finish this thought for a second. So the Gros saying, it's an important point you're raising, but the Gros saying is that the idea of a broker, of someone bringing you a deal even though you didn't ask him, is like it's like you got a benefit even though you didn't ask him to. So therefore that's also obligated, but we're going to see in the halacha you pay him less. So this is the concept. So he's considered a worker, he's considered an employee, a sars, someone that works for you, you have to pay them. It's a recognized service in halacha. We recognize that as a service that you have to pay. And if you asked him, then you pay him the full price. If you did not ask him, then you would pay him a certain benefit that you don't have to, okay? Now, a certain benefit because of the benefit he gave you. Now, what would happen in the Russia's case? So the Russia's case, we have to get into the details of it next time. A whole bunch of different types of cases where there's one broker who brought the idea, there's another broker who closed the deal, one broker gives me the idea, I want to use a different broker to do the deal because he's the one I use all the time, or I think for this particular deal, he'll be better. Sometimes people will say, you know, oh, what did he do for me anyway? You know, I knew this guy from before. What if the deal falls through? What happens if you said to him, bring me a specific buyer? And he brings you the specific buyer, and then you change your mind in the middle, right? I'll leave you with this question. We were working on it last night. It's a great question. You have this thing to sell, and you say, go get, I know that this guy's been looking, you know, I know that there's a certain guy I've been looking for this type of business or this type of house, bring him to the table. If you work and bring him to the table, you have the deal, everything like that. He goes, so you basically hired a guy, essentially. You asked him to go and bring a specific buyer to the table. He went, he did his homework, he talked to him, he spent time working it, and he brings the guy to the table. In the meanwhile, a different guy calls you up, and he's also willing to buy the house for more. So now the broker comes, the broker that you sent on the wild goose chase, the broker you sent originally comes back and says, hey, I got you the guy. He's ready to do the deal. I'm sorry, I don't need it anymore. I have someone else. But you told me to bring this guy. What do you mean? So the question is, he says, you know, generally speaking, we would say that you don't have to pay a broker if you didn't close the deal. But in this case, is that the same? Or do you say, no, look, what would happen if you do that with a tailor? You tell a tailor, make me a specific suit. I want this suit, tailor-made, custom-made, this color, this material, this size. He goes ahead and does it. And in the meanwhile, you got yourself another suit, just a little bit better. And, it, you know, it worked out easier. And you tell them, oh, I don't need it anymore.
They're not comparable.
That's the question. Why do you think that they're not comparable? Why do you think they are comparable? That's what we'll talk about next week. Why do you think, we'll talk about that next week, but why do you think they're not?
Well, when the guy says, bring this guy to the table, the idea is that bring him to the table in the anticipation that we're gonna make a deal. You bringing him to
he
the
did
table
it.
Has a value.
But he would have agreed. You're backing up. The guy's already sign.
So that's a certain amount of value that needs to be determined what that value is. But with the tailor, you've contracted him to make a suit for you, and he's
and he did it.
Material and labor and effort and he contracted.
So this guy doesn't have material and material, but he has labor.
It's time. So what is your case? The tailor, it's unique. The cost he spent doesn't bother me because the person put in time. That's a value in there, but that's unique for that particular person, and he's not going to be able to, you know, utilize it in another way much. Hey, okay, here it's different. You know that you bring to the table doesn't necessarily mean that that's the person at the end of the day that you're going to be selling to. It's not unique. Person find other properties, other use, whatever it is. So
it's an interesting question. It's an interesting question because I think that asking the question makes us think that realize that the work of the broker is real work. I think a lot of people tend to think, what do you do anyway? But
all you did was introduce us.
Right.
That's all you did.
Right. It's a real value. So I think even asking the question brings to light the chashivas, the importance of the work. Now, what the answer is, we'll talk next week, it probably has something to do with what you're saying, that at the end of the day, am I really convinced that if you bring in the deal will close or not? I mean, whatever, we'll talk about that next week, okay? Shkach.
All you need is make a call. Thank you.